KG4ZGS, potentially calling for KO4HKX. The net is over. I missed the last bit of it. I was on the road with my wife and had to help her bring our son in and get unpacked and all that. But anyway, if anyone's out there, I enjoyed listening to y'all's net tonight, and I'll try to check in with another net soon. This is Kilo Golf 4, Zulu Golf Sierra.
So 4, Kilo Golf Zulu, I believe. This is KR4 FNC. Just want to let you know, you're not alone tonight. I was listening to the net earlier, and yeah, I keep on monitoring while I'm doing some work at the desk. But you're not alone.
I think I got KR4 SNZ. Maybe if you could repeat that for me. This is KG4ZGS, Kilo Golf 4, Zulu Golf Sierra.
Both butchered that. But I am Kilo Romeo 4, Foxtrot November Charlie.
November Charlie. Sorry, I thought I heard like SNZ or something, but it's SNC, which is close, similar sounds, but right on. KR4 SNC. This is KG4ZGS. And yeah, my name's Chris, and I'm getting back into ham radio. I've been licensed since 2003, but I've been inactive for many years. And my dad got me back into it late this year, and bought a little mobile rig, and he helped me install it in my car, and got a little dual band, and I'm trying to get my feet wet back in ham radio, and it's kind of intimidating. There's a lot of newer call signs that seem to know a lot more about radio than I ever did, so I'm trying to relearn the terminology and learn how to use this radio, and I've just been enjoying rag chewing with folks, and tonight I called on this station right before the net, and I was trying to get my dad on the Echo Link, and Patrick was there, and he's like, hey, y'all are cool to use the repeater, but we're about to have a net in like 9 minutes, so but he was really polite, and he said we could use the repeater for a second there, so that was awesome. And anyway, KG4ZGS.
Didn't even have the PTT pushed on it, and I was sitting here talking away. That happens. God, I'm getting old. Chris, I think it was. Yeah, our net controllers seem to be, you know, really quite accommodating when it comes to people talking just before the net, and even during the net, I've seen a few breaks come in. So it's good to listen to, and I think they like it and enjoy chatting with everybody. Because most of the day, there's not too many people talking.
Right on. I was actually pleasantly surprised that the net seemed to have a lot of folks checked in. They were checking people in from 9 o'clock till 9:45 or so. And I was like, wow, man, that's really awesome. I'm glad the community around here is so big. I'm out in Campobello, South Carolina, pretty close to Landrum and the North Carolina state line on I-26. So I'm way up here in Spartanburg County, up in the upstate. And yeah, my name's Chris, and I'm glad to meet everybody, and yeah, the net surprised me, but it was cool to listen to that, and then I was, earlier today and yesterday, I was on the Camp Croft machine, and I didn't know, but that machine's part of a network every weekend, between, like, a repeater network, and so I was talking to folks down in Charleston and Myrtle Beach and all over the place. Talked to a fellow up in Columbus, North Carolina, and so it was pretty cool, man. So I'm digging it. Yeah, Chris here, KG4ZGS.
Yeah, Chris, I totally agree. Well, I can't. I think I get some interference here on this repeater every now and then. I'll switch over to the Camp Croft because I can pick that one up pretty easily. But it's part of the SD Heart network, and that one links up every weekend, and you know, you'll talk all the way through. But if you know the repeater that you want to go to down in a certain area, you can, you know, call into Camp Croft and then give a code for the terminal that you want to go to, and it'll light up that repeater, and now your message will be relayed down to that one, and you can talk to the people down there. It's really pretty unique and a really nice system.
Wow, that's cool. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what the code is. I've never done anything like that before, but I'm definitely interested to learn. And I have to tell my dad. He's in Western North Carolina. He's west of Murphy. He's almost as far west as you can get in that state. And so he and I were trying to figure out a repeater that he could hit and that I could hit on 2 meters. I've got my technician license. I could get an HF radio and do some limited 10-meter stuff. And I might do that, but I need to study for my general. But in 2 meters, there's not really anything that we can both hit, because he's located in the mountains. There's mountains in the way, et cetera, et cetera. And the range is pretty far. So then he was telling me, oh, I can hit this Blue Ridge amateur radio up in Greenville, or north of Greenville, I guess. I can hit that on Echolink and talk to you that way. So I talked to him earlier this afternoon while we were on our way down to Georgia. And then as we were on our way back up to South Carolina, I called him on his phone, and I was like, hey, let's do that Echolink. And so then I was trying to hit him up on the Echolink, and then Patrick came in. He's like, hey, we're about to do a net. But so anyway, so now that's that story. So yeah, I've just been having a blast, man. I think it's fun. I used to be into it when I was I got my license when I was a teenager. I was about 16 or so, and I did it for several years, and then, you know, went to college and got married and all that stuff, and I've been out of the game for a while, but my dad helped me set this rig up on Christmas Day, so now I'm back in it, and I'm having fun, so I'm just a few days into getting reacquainted, so I'm still, I've had a license for a long time, but I'm a total noob at this.
Hopefully, I think there's a whole lot of newbie-type people around. For 2 meter and above all the ham stuff, you know, I have not been doing that for very long myself, but I was back in radio in the early 70s, so it's kind of fun and interesting to get back into it. But, you know, on that SE Heart network, if you go to www.seheart.cc, I believe it is .cc, you can get all the information on that particular, and if not, CC is .com. On their particular network, it's got maps of where all of their towers are located and gives you a listing of all their towers with the tower number. And, you know, from that, you know the code in which to get it. There's a drop down on how to communicate and.
That station ID came in. I didn't know if you were coming back in, so I paused for a second there. That's www.scheart.cc, or did you change it to .com? And can you spell SC Heart? Is that H-E-A-R-T, or is that H-A-R-T, or something different?
It's H-E-A-R-T, heart, as in your heart, SC Heart. And I think it's .com. It's got all the listing on it. I'd have to go back on the computer and look at it again. But that's the one that's got it. It's got a drop down that'll talk about how to use the repeaters, and that'll give you a description on how to, you know, when the net goes down, how to signal out a particular repeater, and it'll automatically link to that repeater. And then you can talk to people down in that area. So, you know, it's pretty nice.
Oh, that is very cool. That's very cool. KG4ZGS for ID. Right on. Yeah, I'll look into that. SCHEART.com. I'll check that out and see if I can learn about it. And I'll run it by my dad and see. I'm sure he'll think that's cool too. So, right on. Well, where are you transmitting from, and how's my signal coming in?
You're coming in really good. Of course, you know, we're hitting the repeater, so I get all the coming. I get it, the signal strength of the repeater, but you're hitting the repeater very well. Volume is good. It's clear. No issues, no worries. It's a good signal. I'm currently in the Simpsonville, South Greer kind of area, and you know, it's almost equidistant for me to the Camp Croft repeater as it is to the Caesar's Head repeater. It's a good place to be.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Right on. Yeah, I've been through Simpsonville a few times. I think I've gone and seen a couple of movies down that way, but I'm not super familiar with Simpsonville. I'm more familiar with Greer, but my wife and I have been living in Spartanburg for a while. We have a house out in Campobello, so yeah, it's really fun. I'm just sitting out in my driveway out here in the country, just jabbering on the radio. It's cool, dude.
Weather tonight is really good for it. It's going to turn cold here pretty soon, and being out in the driveway isn't going to be any fun. This is KR4FMC for ID.
Yeah, I've got my car engine on. I'm blowing a little bit of warm air right now, but I could just run it off the battery, but it's not a lot of. I'm running 25 watts, so it's not like a huge amount. But I'd rather not run it off the battery while the car is dead. So I'd like to. So I gotta keep the engine running, run it off the alternator. So. Even if it's cold outside, I'll just turn my car on ahead of time and heat it up. That's my only rig. My dad's like, you need to get a base station now, and I'm like, all right, hold your horses.
Believe it or not, I'm talking to you on a walkie-talkie.
Great. So was I forget the model number, but it was a Kenwood handy-talkie, and it was a dual band. And I learned how to program that thing pretty good, and I really love that. It came with a rubber duck, and then I got like a magnet mount on top of my truck then back then, and so I just attached that magnet mount cable to the handy talkie radio, and that was the only radio that I ever had that was mine. My dad had a bunch of radios, so anyway, this radio that I have now that we put in on Christmas Day, this is only the second radio I've ever owned, and it's the first one that I've had like mounted in a car, so it's pretty cool. It's really fun.
Talkie's kind of cool, and I've got one, you know, a magnetic mount for the truck that when I drive around in that one. At home, I've got it connected up to a Nelson roll-up indoor antenna. Basically, if you think of a TV cable connection wire, it's what it looks like. It just unrolls. I got it hanging from a window, and it's hitting the repeater and working very well, so I'm kind of happy with it.
If I remember correctly, my little handheld, it had three power settings. I think I could do 0.3 watts. For like, you know, caravanning, simplex, I could do, I think, 1 watt and then 5 watts. I think that's what my power settings were on that thing. And this, I've got a little Anytone in here. It's got 5 watts, 15 watts, and 25 watts, and I'm putting out 25 watts right now.
Dad, I've seen some good reviews on the Anytone. Yeah, I'm running what they call a TID radio. It's an H8 model, and it runs at 10 watts, and it can drop down to like 5. I think it's 5, 8, and 10. or it's low, medium, and high setting. I run it at 10 just to make sure that the little walkie-talkie can get out there.
Right on. Yeah, I'm trying to look up the... I've got the box, but I'm trying to look it up on my Amazon order here. I got, let's see. It's an Anytone AT778UV dual band transceiver. It's got 2 meter and 440, VHF, UHF. And then my antenna, this is how much of a noob I am, I gotta look at it. My antenna is a Comet SBB7NMO dual band mobile antenna for 2 meter and 440. So we've got that mounted to my trunk, and we ran the cable through, you know, the trunk and the back seat and all that, and then we wired it up straight to the battery. The power cable that came with the radio wasn't long enough, so we had to daisy chain a little bit of extra cable in there. And of course, my dad had spools of red and black cable, so we made it work, and it seems to be doing pretty good. KG4ZGS for ID.
It's doing the good. It's making the trip. You know, it's up to Campobello. It's about 25 miles to my location, but just got to take that zigzag over the Caesar's head and then down.
It's cool. When I was down in Georgia this afternoon, and we went to visit my wife's family, I checked into the Commerce repeater, and that was KF4DGN, and that fellow's name is Bob, and he said that his repeater was linked to a tower on top of a mountain in Claremont, Georgia, and so if I ran out of range of his repeater, then the Claremont, he would be able to hear it. And so I communicated with him on both of those repeaters, and I talked to some other guys on the Claremont repeater, so that was pretty cool. And then I told them, I was like, hey, I'll be back this afternoon. I'm going to show my father-in-law. And I ended up showing my father-in-law and my brother-in-law the rig, and they both thought it was pretty cool. And my father-in-law said, you know, I might need to get a ham radio license. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, when you're thinking about, you know, like when the hurricanes came through and kind of shut everything down, the ham radios were the only way to get communication across. So it's a valuable skill to have around. It's going to be up when everything else goes down.
Hurricane Helene was a giant mess. It came right through where I am, and like trees down everywhere, power lines down everywhere. We're on a well out here, and I don't have secondary power to power my well. And my son was born last year, and he was, I don't know, 3 or 4 months old when that hurricane hit. And so we needed to be able to, you know, make bottles for him and clean the bottles and all. And I could boil water. I had, you know, I've got lots of propane and I've got a burner outside and stuff like that. But there was no way to get more fresh water with our well being down. And I didn't have enough stored on hand. So we actually evacuated up to my family's place. And they're far enough west in North Carolina that they weren't even really hit by the hurricane that much. They got some rain, but it didn't really tear anything up where they were, so their power grid was still on. They were west of the major damage path. But, yeah, Hurricane Helene, I will never forget it. I had so many limbs down in my yard, and I'm talking about limbs the size of trees. You know, some of these limbs were 1.5 feet or 2 feet wide down in my yard. And... So I had to, you know, I was doing a lot of work, and I ended up, somehow, it might have been related to the work I was doing on those trees, but I got a hernia, and I had to have hernia surgery last year on Christmas Eve, and that sucked. So then as I'm recovering from hernia surgery, I still have all this giant mess in my yard. And I was having to look at that mess for so long before I could really get to it. And I've got, you know, a young baby, you know, to also care for. So that was tough, man. But I finally got that mess cleaned up. It took me about 10 or 11 months, but I finally got my yard clean. And yeah, it was rough, dude.
5-4-LZI-4.
Head to LZI-4. Like a youngster. I feel like a youngster most of the time, but I am aging up there. This is KR4 FNZ, just rising.
KR4 DDD.
Go ahead, DDD and I, we know one another. I'm making that comment because the EC of Abbeville County, I heard him say about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, he tried to promote the amateur service to a scout, and the scout told him, why should I get an amateur rate, get an amateur license? I can take your cell phone and call anywhere in the world. And they kind of dumbfounded me.
This is KI4DDD. I've heard you guys talking for a while. I'm also on a handheld. I think I'm probably about exactly Chris's age. I'm 39. And the website you guys are looking for is schart.us. schart.us. The WARN system, which is linked in this area. But now there's younger folks, but there are a lot of those people coming from the makerspace, like the Meshtastic system, super popular right now among the younger folks.
G4ZGS. Yeah, the Chris here. I am 38, so I guess I'm young, and I'm also not young. After hernia surgery, I don't feel young anymore. And having a kid's starting to make my hair go a little gray, but yeah, it's cool. I'm trying to get some of my friends into it who are close in age to me. But maybe it'll be, I looked it up, there is no minimum age requirement for a ham radio license. So maybe as I'm raising my boy, I'll try to get him into it too.
Age requirements for sure, but everybody's about 55 and older, most people. There's a few exceptions, but will there be enough people for now or more for
now? I'm involved with the Clemson University Club, and that's actually had a bit of a resurgence recently. And I'd say the median age there is probably about 25, 26. A lot of grad students.
Sounds one of those things where you kind of get a taste for it and you go, ooh, that sounds really cool, and then they start spreading it among their friends and it keeps on growing. And I think that's what we need, just keep the hobby growing.
I think some of the stereotype that it's an old man's hobby is just a perception bias, because it's a lifetime hobby. Retired folks have more time to participate, but that doesn't mean that younger folks aren't interested.
That I've showed it to a couple of my friends, and they thought it was like really cool, and so who knows, you know, I'm trying to encourage them. I've got some friends that are more preparedness minded, and so I might be trying to recruit some folks locally here to get into it. They're all roughly my age, late 30s, early 40s.
Friday. Well, I was also listening on the Anderson Club's thing here about a week or two weeks ago. Their current incoming vice president down there, mate, down there about their place down there, everybody's 55 and older. It's an amazing comment. And when I heard him say that on the air about it, I said, I second that. I don't doubt it.
So it is with the rise of the mesh-tastic system, which is not technically ham. There's so much bet sharing now between the maker community and the computer tinkering community and hams that I think it's bringing a lot of younger folks in, which is fantastic.
But I know everybody in this service better start waking up, because we all will go one day and be like myself. I didn't get my license till 5, but I found out through this very repeated one about amateur service in Christmas of 1976, and there's a lot of people I told KL7FO down there that time 4 or 5 years ago. There's a lot of people that think the internet and cell phones is all there is.
There's definitely a lot of bet sharing between people who are into it for preparedness and people who are into it for the science aspect. And frankly, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It's good to have people involved.
ZGS here. I guess I'm a teacher for a living. I teach string instruments. I play violin, and so I teach privately. But I've also taught at a school, like a private school, and they were asking one year if I had any other things that I know a lot about that I could offer a class in. And so it's given me ideas of, like, maybe I could offer a ham radio class at that school, and I got to learn more. I'm only a technician, so I need to read up a lot before I try to teach a class in it, and then I'd probably also want to get a general license. I'm going to try to get my general license this next year, I think, but it's just giving me, it's kind of getting the wheels turning in my head. I think that'd be a cool class to offer some high school kids, and it's like, hey, passing the class means you get your amateur radio license, you know, and it's a private school, and they, I would say for the most part, have, they're well-funded, so they'd be able to, you know, get radios and stuff like that, so ideas for things to do, I think that's cool. KG4DGS, hadn't heard KR4FNC in a second. Are you still out there?
Or FNC.
Yeah, I'm sitting here, I'm listening, just going, big smile on my face, going, I recognize a lot of this stuff, and I resemble a lot of it, too.
For LCI, Corporal Friday, there was another hand you talked about. He told, I don't know if he still does, because I ain't heard him on the air in ages now. His call was KG4W. WRC or something like that. His name was Sam. He taught science class over there at Wahala High, and he incorporated amateur radio into his science class. Whether he still does it, I don't know. I ain't heard him today.
KI4DED for ID. There's always a lot of participation with the scout. I think my first exposure firsthand was an employee of my middle school. It's, you know, anecdotal. But the scouts are still quite involved with ham radio.
DGS, yeah, I had some good times in the scouts. They did radio. I knew of radio groups within the scouts when I participated as a kid. I didn't participate. My scout troop didn't do any of that. But I did enjoy the camping trips and stuff like that. So it's just, you know, my son's 18 months old, so these are all ideas for me and him and stuff like that that I'm thinking about. You know, I'd love to go on those camping trips with him, and if he wanted to be in a Boy Scout troop or whatever, that'd be something cool that I could bring to the table to whatever troop if they didn't already have a connection to radio. That's awesome. I don't know who's next. KG4ZGS.
that hobby continues to go, but I hear and see other might be 5 years old and all different concerns I've noticed, but that's been it. But when I being all it is, I don't know how we're going to do it, but some
KI4LDI, Andy, you are out of the repeater more than you are in the repeater on that last transmission. You might want to move. Frankly, I think the silver lining is people have been saying this is a dying hobby for 20 years and we're still here, right? I think the innovation and the tinkering is keeping it alive, plus the preparedness aspect.
Am I any better now? I'll go back and get back on the fix station if it's too bad.
Or much better, that last transmission.
No, go ahead and carry on. I heard the comments of those other two about the future. And I know how I found out about it, but when you got people making comments, why should I get all amateur license when I can call in one world? He couldn't exactly tell 7FO disputed, it's true, but they don't understand the situation. So y'all go ahead and I'll go back just to listen. KI4LZI Portable.
GGS here. I think I got your name as Andy there, KI4LZI. That last couple of transmissions was much better. I was having a hard time hearing you earlier. You were coming in, but it was a little scratchy, and then it got real choppy, but you were very strong right there. I'll kick it back over to KI4DDD.
Yeah, I'm just standing in the front yard with an HT, but I usually do okay from here if you guys can't hear me yell at me. But I got licensed in high school and was busy with it kind of in early college and then fell off for about 10 years simply because there wasn't a lot going on around here. Or at least I wasn't aware of it. There were clubs, but it was a situation that Andy mentions where it's a lot of older folks. And now we are the older folks. So funny how that happens.
KI4DDD, this is KG4ZGS. I was telling the guys, you might have heard earlier during the conversation, I was telling KR4FNC that I had gotten my license back in 2003, but I fell off for many years, probably like 10 or 12 years at least. I kept my license renewed over the years. I've renewed it twice now, but I just completely fell out of the hobby and didn't transmit or anything like that, and so now I'm back in it. I'm getting my feet wet, and it's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it, but you know, I got into it when I was young, but now I'm not an old guy, but you know, I'm right there with you, dude. Both knocking on the door of 40 here, so anyway.
I think the other thing we have going for us is that technology has drastically reduced the price, which has lowered the barrier to entry for a lot of people. The radio I'm talking to you on now, nowadays I can get an equivalent for less than $50. And this would have been $350 in 2005, and adjust for inflation too. That mobile you just put in your car, again, same deal, that would have been several hundred dollars, adjust for inflation, closer to five in today's money. And now you get a decent mobile, like what you just bought for $150. So a lot more people can get into it, and it's not so much of a commitment.
Yeah, the whole setup, I got the radio, the antenna mount, and the radio mount. I got a little gooseneck bolted to the passenger seat rail. The whole setup, I don't know, man. I think it was less than $300. It might have been, I forgot what I spent. It was $220 or $250 or something like that. It wasn't that much. So, and like, you know, I've seen some of those HTs, you know, for $35 or $50 or whatever, and I'm like, dang, dude, that is way cheaper than my Kenwood was back in the day. So, yeah, you're right, dude. That barrier to entry, it's cheaper to do the hobby, and I think it, I mean, this just gets me back to my teaching mind, just gets me thinking on, like, how easy would it be, you know, if the kids had, you know, in the class had to buy, you know, a $50 or $60 radio to be able to, like, you know, learn on and get their license and be able to transmit and stuff like that. I mean, that's a pretty cheap class item as far as, like, an extra, you know, like a specialty class or whatever goes. That's cheap. That's exactly right. KG4ZGS.
KG4ZDD for ID. Yeah, a lot of the entry-level Baofeng, UV5R, you can get a two-pack for $30 on Amazon when they're on sale. That's $15 a radio. And that's just a science project. That's not a commitment.
Incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Yeah, dude, the wheels are turning, so we'll see. Having my son changes things in my teaching life, but I definitely have the wheels turning, and at the very minimum, I want to try to get him into it. I always enjoyed playing on the radio with my dad when I was a kid. My mom and dad had CB radios for a long time, and then my dad got into amateur radio, and he had a... At one point, he had a... I think he still has this radio, but I don't know if he's got it working or up and running or whatever right now, but he had a Ranger that did 10 meters and 11 meters, so he did 10 meters and CB, so we could switch back and forth, and, you know, he'd have to watch his power or whatever going to CB, but we would do road trips and go across the country, and we get on CB and talk to the truckers, and then we get on 10 meters and, you know, talk to people in other states. And it was just, I remember doing that stuff with my dad, and I thought it was fun, and maybe I can get my son into it as well. So back to you, KI4DDD.
You and me both are definitely in agreement there. I've noticed a lot less CB chatter, but the CB hobby is still alive and well. And we've also had a big rise in GMRS. They've relaxed the licensing requirements, made it easier, made it broader, because it covers your whole household now. In this area, we have GMRS repeaters that are quite strong. And on Monday night, there's a GMRS net in this area. If you have a scanner or something that can receive GMRS, or even, frankly, that radio in your car certainly can, although technically you're not supposed to transmit on GMRS with that. Listening to that net, I've been surprised by just how many folks are involved in that.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I've been out of the hobby so long that getting back into it, a lot has changed since when I was a kid, and I had, you know, first started in ham. So a lot of it's new, and I don't know how long GMRS has been around. My dad was telling me about it, and as I've been trying to reacquaint myself, I've been just reading a lot about various, you know, bands, amateur and otherwise. And I guess I understand GMRS as a UHF frequency that's not too far off from the 440 band. Is that right?
GMRS, it's General Mobile Radio Service, is similar to CB. They've changed the rules nowadays where low-power GMRS does not require a license, but high-power GMRS, like a 40-watt mobile capable of using repeaters, does require a license. Aptitude tests like ham. It's $30 for 10 years, and it covers your whole family. You guys can't link repeaters, and you can't do nearly as much stuff as you can on ham, but if you want resilient comms for your overlanding group or just preparedness or whatever, it's a cool way to get the family that's not necessarily ready to commit to a ham test into the hobby or just be prepared.
My dad's licensed, but my mom is not licensed, but they'll use GMRS radios when, you know, one of them's at home and the other one's going into town or whatever. So, yeah, he was telling me about it. I've never communicated on GMRS, but I'm definitely interested to learn about it, and I can see a lot of money being spent in my future, even on cheap radios. You just get into a hobby and you just get more and more gadgets.
KI4DDD for ID. Yeah, so a lot of people will use radios like what we're talking on right now because the Chinese radios are typically uncorked from the factory. They'll use those for GMRS, but technically you're not supposed to because they aren't type accepted for that service. You can buy dedicated GMRS mobiles and handhelds, no doubt. I defer to having a separate GMRS mobile. I actually just bought one, or just got one as a gift, and I'm going to set that up, simply because your antenna that's resonant for GMRS at 462 megahertz isn't going to have a good SWR at, our UHF. So, frankly, you might as well have two radios.
Roger, yeah, I'm just thinking KG4ZGS. I wonder, is KR4FNC still in there?
Not listening. KR4FNC. I'm listening, just smiling all the time, going, yeah, we can spend a whole lot of money, and yet you can go cheap. You know, the UV5Rs are a great introductory into it. It's a little handheld walkie-talkie. They were just limited at 5 watts, but the recent models I saw come out were now 10 watts, so... Yeah, they're getting a little better, a little more powerful, and they definitely have a good reach.
I'm talking to you guys on a Baofeng UV82HP, which was a $64 radio in 2015. Now a 7 or 8 watt or even allegedly 10 watt Baofeng is not out of the ordinary.
My other radio, I got a Baofeng... what is it? BF 8FH. Yeah, F8HP, which is an 8 watt Baofeng, and it covers the same things that the UV5R does, but it's got 8 watts, and the new model on that one also goes up to 10 watts. So they're getting better all the time.
I'm no scientist, but we've got to be getting dangerously close to the point where if you have a good high-gain antenna, like a 15.6-inch whip, at 10 watts, you may want to start keeping that away from your face.
Hey, you're Tom Burn. Oh, man. Back in the day when we had mobiles run 100 watts, it was if you got close, touched that antenna, you would definitely get a shock. There's no doubt about it. They never fired up that 100 watt linear until they made sure that the engine was running. Otherwise, it would kill their battery in just a matter of minutes.
The guidelines for acceptable exposure get down to. It's surprising how much is actually okay, but I don't know. I find a lot less. You can usually get away with a lot less than you think you need. My last daily driver had a Leekson ZV898 UHF VHF mobile in there with a trunk mount NMO antenna that was only, 18 inches tall. And that's a 10-watt radio. I never had a problem working any local repeaters with that thing on 10 watts. Granted, I had a good antenna set up, but still, you don't need that much.
On my first radio, it was a Kenwood HT, and I had a roof mount magnetic antenna, and that thing, the highest power it had was 5 watts, and I had no problem hitting the local repeaters, so that was pretty cool. And then we would use it for Simplex when we were caravanning or whatever, but even 5 watts. Now, I grew up in Metro Atlanta, so there were a lot of repeaters nearby, and it was densely populated. So I guess now where I live is a little bit more rural, so I don't know if I'd have the same luck with 5 watts that I did back then. But, I'm putting out 25 watts right now. I could dial it down. I dialed it down when I was at hitting the Camp Croft machine. To 15, I dialed it down to 5 watts, and they said, the fellow I was talking to said there was some white noise, so then I brought it back up to 15 watts, and he said that's the sweet spot. I'm putting out 25 watts right now.
Reduce power, go ahead and try it. You're 100% full quieting right now. You're getting in 100%.
Give it a try. I'll switch my power down to 15 and then key back up. Give me a second.
You could dial down to 10 watts and you'd still get in really, really good.
I think I might have overkeyed. Sorry about that. This is 15 watts, KG4ZGS, 15 watts from Campobello.
Sounds just as good as where you were at on 25, so no degradation whatsoever.
Yeah, height is might. The Caesar's head repeater is way up there.
Here, I can put out a little less power and still hit it.
You're not just hitting it, you're still full quieting.
I'll dial it down again. Let's see what happens at 5 watts. It might put out some of that white noise. Let's see, 15 might be the sweet spot like it was in Camp Croft, but I'll dial it down again. G4ZGS putting out 5 watts.
It's doing great. Full quieting. It sounds just as good as when you're at 15 and at 25.
It's entirely possible that you're going to move 10 feet to the left and it won't be that way, but you're doing great.
Right on, then I'll operate it there. That's cool. sorry if I was blasting y'all before.
It sounded good. Like I said, you know, when we get the signal, it's all coming off of the repeater. So repeater comes through fine. What you're listening for is the quality of your audio going into the repeater.
I'm still trying to learn it all, but yeah, I guess in my mind I had the experience with the truckers on CB. I think the wattage maximum for CB is 4 watts, but sometimes these truckers would blare in there with like 50 watts or something, and they would just totally overpower everybody. And so anyway, but I guess it's y'all are hearing what the repeater is sending out. So if I'm hitting the repeater, then it's all good. KG4ZGS.
Yeah, KI4DDD for ID. Yeah, the CF on top of people, which is kind of by design. That's why airplanes use AM, because if you got stations A, B, C, and D, where A can't hear D, you can't have, like, you know, B stepping on top of D, even though you can't hear them. Station C will hear B and D, if that makes any sense. Where with FM, you just jam, and it's less, but we don't, that doesn't really matter with repeaters. But yeah, with AM signals, more power, you're louder, and you will blow people out.
I've just got so much to learn. it's intimidating to step into this giant field of knowledge and not know very much. And also, I haven't been doing it for so many years, but I've had my license for so long, I've kind of feel a little silly being as ignorant as I am about it all, but I'm trying to learn, so I appreciate you guys' patience and talking and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. KG4ZGS.
Sure, if your mobile has airband receives, a lot of the new Chinese radios do. You certainly can't transmit AM, but if you're near Greer, write down 118.8. 118.8 AM is the western approach for Greer, and frankly, you can probably get the eastern too. But 118.8 is the western approach frequency where commercial airliners talk to the tower, and you'll hear all kinds of traffic on there near Greer.
I see the planes coming in, not directly overhead my house, but I can see their circling patterns as they're approaching for a landing at Greenville-Spartanburg.
You have a local airport in town, which is a non-controlled airport, so everybody just announces their intention, which is great for monitoring planes because it makes everything really obvious. But, yeah, of course, Greenville-Spartanburg, you're going to hear them hail that as Greer. I mean, they've got 4 different frequencies. They've got, like, general traffic. They've got western approach, I think an eastern approach. They've got a ground frequency. If you're nearby, you can hear it all.
Right on. I guess I've lived in Spartanburg for a while, but I didn't realize Greer had their own airport. wow. And it's all like, hey, I'm coming in. Watch out, everybody else. That's funny, dude. But that's cool, though. It's less busy, so I guess they can get away with that. KG4ZGS.
But no, to be clear, Greenville-Spartanburg International Airport, I think, is technically in Greer. So pilots will refer to it as Greer, even though it's Greenville-Spartanburg. It's the same. I'm here next to Clemson, and the Oconee Regional Airport, which is in Oconee County, is referred to as Clemson because it's adjacent. It's just how they do it.
Right on.
In a non-controlled airport like Clemson, you don't have a tower unless they bring in a temporary tower for, like, a Clemson football game. And, therefore, pilots just state their intent. And everybody's listening, so you don't have any kind of problems because people just state intent and then move.
Cool. I did not know that. That's very interesting. It reminds me, I've seen some of these videos of some of these intersections in other countries that don't have any traffic lights, and there's like 10 roads approaching the same intersection, and it's a giant cluster, and everybody's seen, you can watch hours of the footage, and there's no wrecks, there's just so many people entering in all this way, and they all just flow in just a crazy way, but I guess the airport's probably not that busy, right? So it's a little bit easier, but that's what it triggered in my mind was that thought.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Greenville-Spartanburg, from where I am, you know, since radio is so good line of sight, I hear the Western approach all the time, but I'm only getting one side of that conversation because I'm not getting the tower, which for me is over the horizon. You might be able to get the tower, too.
That's interesting. Yeah. Wow. That's wild, dude. So you can hear the planes, but the tower is over the horizon. That's crazy. That's mind-blowing to me right now. It's probably like you're used to this. You know all this stuff, but to me, you're blowing my mind right now. This is awesome.
The airplanes are flying, 15,000-20,000 feet in the air? Yeah, it's all line of sight for them.
A lot of those commercial airliners, I mean, we're talking, 20,000 to 30,000 feet? If they're cross-country, they could be 30,000 feet. That's, about 5,000 feet in a mile. I mean, that's 5-6 miles high. And based on the curvature of the Earth, I mean, that's line of sight until they're what? As far as your radio, you're going to run out of signal strength before you're not line of sight.
So my new rig to one of my buddies, I teach his son cello. I'm going to show him. He's going to sell it and get him in on this action.
Good. I don't know. I'm not sure if the one you have in your car receives AM, but I'd check that out when you're done with us. It might. A lot of the new Chinese radios will receive, obviously they're not going to transmit AM, but they'll receive airband.
Pull out that handy-dandy manual, dude. I got to get into it. It's a little tedious. I'm not used to, I'm used to menu-driven stuff, and like my dad was showing me the CHIRP program. I don't have the proper cable to connect my computer to my radio, so I got to get that if I want to use that program. So all the repeaters I put in here, I put in manually, but it is tedious. So I'll definitely look into that and see if that's something that I can listen in on. That would be pretty interesting to hear those guys coming in.
Looking in the radio or the manual, what you want to do is see which frequencies you have TX on. And which frequencies you have RX. The RX is receive only, and the TX means you can transmit on it.
On the newest Chinese radios, generally speaking, if you go to VFO mode and you just plug in, 118.8, it should automatically just go to AM. You shouldn't even have to tell it to go to AM from FM, because anything pretty much globally, that's an AM-only channel. I don't think anybody's using FM anywhere in the world in that spec. So it should automatically default. You shouldn't even have to program it.